How's my hair look? My name's Michaeline, grateful alcoholic. Am I screaming? Okay, well, James asked me to, so make sure I'm following direction. Thanks, Letha. And thanks, Jay and the committee. This is, I already feel like I've come home. I said I feel like I have a new home group. And I wanted to thank my baby Denise from driving down from Charlotte. She's originally from my hometown in San Diego, and sponsorship works wherever you go. And Mark and Roxanne, they got sober in San Diego, that drove down from Charlotte. That meant a lot to me. I've already been an emotional wreck this whole weekend because I'm like spiritually schizophrenic half the time, you know. I'm either walking hand in hand with the master or trying to catch up with him, and so I'm already worn out, and I'm just starting. So it's been fun, and I was sitting here trying to get right. Happy birthday, Hester. That was awesome. I'm just thrilled that you're here to share it with us. And I think that there's a lot of new people out here tonight. Anybody less than a year, could you raise your hand? Ooh, love it. Welcome home. I want to welcome you home, and I want to thank the old-timers that are here for leading the way for me. My sobriety date's June 30th, 1982, and for that I'm forever grateful. It is by God's grace, and I know it. I was looking out at this happy group tonight, and lots of smiles, and I thought there was a place in all of our lives, one moment where the pain was so bad that we reached out to God, and he touched us by grace and brought us together tonight. And it's amazing to know that we all came from that one spot. And you reach your hand out, the master will take your hand. I read two books. One's black, one's blue. And the black one says, his house has many mansions. And this is my mansion. This is the house he gave me to serve him and others, and I am eternally grateful for that. I get like this, and I'm past menopause, so I don't know how to explain it. Not that past, but I'm pretty past. I love the laughter. I like listening to the prayer. Sometimes I whisper the prayer just so I can hear all of you say it, and it fills me up. And I always do a prayer before I speak, and the prayer goes something like this: Dear God, make me a channel. If I can touch one heart and say one thing, I'll be eternally grateful. And please don't let me suck. Amen. Because what I figured out is God reads my mind. And why act like I'm all that in a bag of chips when he knows me? You know, I'm basically more concerned with my hair and my shoes. And I have to work hard to carry the message. So I just want you to know what I'm really like. I almost drank at 6.5 years sober, and I got too big for my panties. And I just started sharing what I was like, what happened, and what I wished I was like. You know? Or what I thought I should be like, or what I was hoping I'd be like by that age of sobriety. And I started not really wanting to share where I really was. And it almost took me back to the bottle. And I vowed, you know, getting through that I would never do that again. So I'm just going to tell you a little bit about what I was like and what happened to me as a result of you and what I'm really like now. And if it doesn't sound like I've made a lot of progress, swear to God I have, you know. Just some days are better than others, and I did want to grow up to join you. I was born in Houston, and I was raised in Phoenix, and I grew up in Catholic school at St. Agnes, and I was from the generation that, you know, if you went to Catholic school, and that day you became a nun, and or a hooker, you know, I mean, it was like, seemed to go either way, you know. And, but I was going for the nun. And our order was the Blessed Virgin Mary order, and they called them the BVMs. Loved them. Loved the outfits. Loved black. Loved it. And I liked being Catholic. I like rosary beads, and I like candles, and I like St. Joseph, and I like dressing up for Halloween like St. Bernadette, and I just loved it. I mean, I was such a dork. And I come from five generations of alcoholics, and so that's what my house was like. That's what my godparents were like. We were all the same. And we were happy Catholics, but a little whacked. And my house was not normal. But I thought I saw people that were normal, and they were all on TV, and it was Ozzie and Harriet and Father Knows Best. And my favorite, my role model was Donna Reed. And if you don't know who she is, then whatever, you know, but she's good. She's just good. But I was going to be a nun, so I didn't worry too much about anything. And then one day I had my first drink. And it was the first time I'd gone to a party where there were no nuns present. And I had my first drink, and the next day I couldn't be a nun. And I certainly couldn't join that order. So, you know, it was just like, whoa. And so if you're an alcoholic like me, you're going to have a backup plan, you know. And my backup plan at the age of 14 was to become a go-go dancer. And so I became a go-go dancer at 14. And I danced at a bar called the Pirate's Den. It's just nasty. But you know what? You have to pick a career path, you know. And minimum wage in those days was 65 cents an hour, and dancing at the par, I don't mean to offend anybody, but I will. And but minimum wage was 65 cents an hour then, and dancing was $4 an hour cash plus tips. And I was perky. I'm not now, but I'm propped now. I'm propped, but I was perky then, and but I just wasn't cut out for the go-go scene, you know. I just wasn't a good fit, you know. I'm kind of conservative at heart, and so what was backup plan number three? And what I realized I wanted to do was be like Donna Reed and have a happily ever after. After family. So I was almost 15 now, and I saved up all my go-go money, and I had over $800 in cash, and I bought me a Jacqueline Kennedy suit. I got my hair all done up, and I got my string of pearls. Got on my first airplane and went to San Diego to find a sailor. Because I heard they'd marry anybody, you know. I wanted to get the Donna Reed thing going, you know, and I knew, because I'd watched enough episodes, that you get a guy and you get a puppy and you make a meatloaf, and basically, and get a baby, and then they'll bring home ice cream and you make a meatloaf and everybody will be happy. And I do have a problem with picking good-looking alcoholics with potential. I do have a problem with that still today. I just like them, you know. I just can't help it. So what I did was that. And I had never really been a legitimate person. I don't know if you've ever tried to pretend to be a legitimate person when you're really not one, but it's stressful. It is. It'll wear you out. And I've never been to high school. It just looks stressful, so I try not to do stressful things. But I did enroll in college because that looked fun, you know. So I went to that instead. And I thought, I'll have babies and I'll wear a stethoscope and I'll be a Girl Scout leader. That would be a good mommy thing to do. And I just had a big list from watching Donna Reed of things to do to be a legitimate person. And I just started checking them off. And I actually was shooting for Al-Anon. I overstretched the mark just a bit. But I kind of liked that for me. I was good at suffering. I was martyred out. He was the bad one. I was the good one. He'd misbehave, I'd get a couch. I mean, we kind of had a rhythm going. And I didn't drink very often because it just, I didn't really like it. I liked suffering and overdoing it. That was kind of more my thing. My mantra was, after all I've done for you. And I kept having these kids and joining more things and working more shifts at the hospital. And I was president of everything. And inside where I really lived, I was always the same. I was driven by 100 forms of fear. Self-pity, self-seeking, and self-delusion. All my life, I was like that. But what I got good at from watching TV is pretending to be a legitimate person. I just dressed up like one, and some people bought it. I never bought it. I was always afraid they were going to find out. I was the only one that wasn't legitimate. Everybody else was legitimate in La Mesa. Everybody. Everybody. The only thing I seemed good at was loving my kids. I loved them. I liked them. They filled a spot inside of me that had been so empty that that's where most of my energy went to. And I worked in the emergency room, and I loved touching people's faces and trying to make them feel better, and somehow that would make me feel better. But if I wasn't in the right setting and I was left alone with me, it didn't feel good, and I'd always get so scared. And so I'd sign up and join something else. So I was always looking for an outside fix to a spiritual hole. I was always looking for that forever. It wasn't anything brand new for me. I'd been doing it my whole life. I was not really conscious of this. I just was busy from start to finish every single day. And if I started feeling like I was going to wear out and pop, I'd just join something else, sign up for something else. I taught primary in the Mormon church for 3 years. I am not a Mormon. Don't want to offend the Mormons, but I'm not one. But I liked making jam. The only people I knew that made jam were Mormons. Never spilled a real drink, I'll tell you that. So sorry about the water. But that's what I was like. I mean, really what I was like. There was a spiritual hole, and I was trying to fill it up with stuff. And I just couldn't fix myself. But I never thought I had alcoholism. I thought he had alcoholism. And he was starting to wreck my happily ever after family. And I would have what I called Al-Anon episodes. And that's where they drive you to drink. We're good women. We would not normally drink. Because drinking's bad. Causes a lot of problems for a lot of people. But every once in a while, you've just had enough, and I go nuts at PTA bowling. And just bowl on the wrong lane and just go for it. You know, I just go out of control. And I'd have an episode. But it wasn't enough to get a pattern going. And I never felt bad about it. I felt entitled to it. But I liked my drinks weak. I don't like the taste of alcohol. It kind of made me nervous, really. It just wasn't really my deal. So I never thought I'd get alcoholism because I came from 5 generations of people that had it, and it wasn't pretty. They did some bad things. They misbehaved a lot, all of them. Well, I'm from Texas. They misbehave whether they're crazy down there. Jesus, what a place to be from. You know, it's just like scary, but whatever. If there's any other Texans, I apologize, but get honest. You know, it's not a good place. So this is what I think I thought happened. His drinking wrecked everything, and I couldn't let it. this family that I wanted happily ever after was going to work with or without him. And I tried to make it work with him, and now he had to go. And now I'm going to pull it together. The sense of shame and guilt, I knew I was the only divorced woman in La Mesa. And I knew that. I didn't know anybody that was divorced. In our neighborhood, everybody was married, and you did family stuff together. And my girlfriend actually got me into drinking. And she was not an alcoholic. She was my neighbor and my friend, and she had a front porch. And I would get home from my shift at the hospital, and I had five kids. They were everywhere. They were involved in everything. So I'd start what I called the second shift. And I was a little tense. I don't know if you've ever been tense, but your neck just tense. And I had so much going on, and they had so much going on, and I'm, oh, my God. And she says, why don't you come over and have a glass of wine on the front porch? Just take 10 or 15 minutes, relax a little bit, before what I called the second shift began. Shamrock had to go to baton. This one had to go to dance. This one was in soccer. We're a busy family. She goes, it's really good wine. She's not alcoholic. She has a good glass of wine every night at 5 o'clock. And I thought, well, you know, okay. Well, I didn't love it. I got to be honest with you. She said she spent a lot of money on it. I thought she got cheated. But I didn't want to hurt her feelings. And I was sipping. I was still a sipper in those days. And pretty soon, I don't know if you've ever drank, but you acquire taste for just about anything. And so-so wine became great wine. I love this wine. This is damn fine wine. I think I'll have another glass of this fine wine. Well, I developed such a taste for fine wine that one day I went across the street after work before the second shift, and she had gotten me a box of wine. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen a box of wine, but it's got a spigot. I said, well, this is a lot more convenient. I just love this because those little bottles go quick. I thought, I do believe I love box of wine. I think I'm going to drink this now. And then pretty soon this woman, this so-called friend, you know how some of them will get uppity. Judgmental. I don't like judgment. People never did, never will. She said, I'm a little concerned. You're sure drinking a lot. I said, well, you were the one that told me I needed to relax. I'm relaxed now. First you want me to relax. Now I'm relaxed. Now you're concerned. I don't get this, you know. And I think it was because I was changing. If you're powerless over alcohol and you have the progressive disease of alcoholism, it's going to start taking you someplace you didn't plan on going. Would have never done it on purpose. And you're going to start hurting the people that you love the most. But I didn't see it when I was doing it. What I saw was these kids were starting to get on my nerves. I don't know if you have kids, but they're demanding. And they're selfish. And all they think about is themselves. They don't appreciate you one bit after all you've done for them. Gimme, gimme, gimme. Take me, take me, take me. Help me, help me, help me. Dinner, dinner, dinner. You know, it's like, whoa, you know. So those kids, I mean, started getting on my nerves. I don't know why they started sucking the life out of me. And I thought, screw them. I am not the only carpool mother in La Mesa. Catch a ride to Baton. I'm busy relaxing here, and I deserve to relax. I don't appreciate the pressure. I hate their father. You know, I mean, funny now, it wasn't funny then. They were really getting weird, you know, and just not appreciating me anymore, and not understanding. I have a very demanding job in that emergency room, and I do need to relax a lot. And And I'm sick of making meatloaf, so order a pizza. Meatloaves are greasy. Order a pizza and give them a bad check. I don't know. I mean, it's just the whole thing getting out of control here. I hate him, you know, because he'd give me child support, I could do better. I mean, that's part of the problem. If you're not, I needed another drink. And now I'm going to have to find another person because she has turned on me. She thinks I should go make a meatloaf. The one that convinces you that you need a break is now trying to convince you to go home. Well, I started seeking lower companionship, but I didn't know it. You don't know you have alcoholism until you read the book and you go, oh my God, I've got alcoholism. They're talking about me in here. But I thought I was just getting away from snooty britches. Because I don't like those kind of people, you know, think they're better than you are, you know. But I had some friends that went to the Stardust Country Club, and they went once or twice a month, and they went dancing. And I'd never been in a bar since I'd been 14. I'd never, because Donna Reed would not go to a bar, would she? So I couldn't go. She couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. But the kids were starting to get real judgmental, and they looked at me funny. You know, and I thought, why put them through stress? I'll just drink not around them, which seemed like a good idea at the time. And I was going to go to this place that's not really like a bar, and I was going to relax there instead. And I called that my Cinderella night. And that was the night it happened. I drank. It fixed me. It made me all better, like it had never done before. I didn't know that. I thought it was that place and those people, but I laughed and I had fun. And I told people I was 10 years older than I actually was, so they'd say, God, you look good for your age. Kind of like I'm starting to do now, you know. I'm actually 80. But that's what happens with the progressive disease of alcoholism. It begins to take you where it's got to take you because it's a rule. It's a progressive disease. It takes you without your permission, but with your full participation, and that is the disease I have. I went willingly, having no idea what was in store for me. And what I did was I began to drink myself out of places. I was watching the golf cart go across the thing, and I kind of like to have fun. I know that's hard to believe, but I just think if you can't have fun, why do it? And so I thought it'd be fun to drive the golf cart into the swimming pool one night. Apparently, they're very expensive, because when it came to make amends on that one, it took a long time. But I thought that was fun. And my sponsor thought it was worth mentioning, you know, and putting it on an 8-step list. And she goes, we're definitely going to have to call them and check on that. I got one of those kind of sponsors. Those people got snooty, too. You know, I was all that, too, but I don't like certain people. They just get a little big for their britches. Think they're kind of fancy. And so I ended up eventually, I'll fast forward this a bit, at a place called Hookies with a pool stick. And I had a new best friend. Her name was Toothless Annie. She had left her teeth at some bar. She couldn't remember when, and she thought, hell with it, you know. And Brute Bill, we liked Brute Bill because the Brute thing was real big and his face would eventually be on it and somebody pulled the 8 hairs on the back of his head and he'd just save his life, you know, and we did that every night. And those people are more my kind of people. They're relaxed. They're not putting on airs, trust me. my kind of people, you know, just kind of relaxed. And I went in there and I was a little classier than that, you know, at least I could find my teeth, you know, and I usually made it to the bathroom before I threw up. But, you know, what I realized was this was getting out of control. And I just decided, I thought, okay, I was going for a break and I was going to relax. And I didn't mean for it to get so horrible and it's not good. And I know it. And I decided to not drink anymore and just stay home. Go to work and go home and just go to Little League. And don't hurry up the Little League kids so that you can go, you know, get it together. You know, you got carried away, okay. If you're powerless over alcohol, you're not going to be able to do that. I didn't know that. I thought if I made a decision and I meant it, that I'd be able to do it, and I didn't know that I wouldn't be able to not drink. I did not know. Wouldn't have done me any good if I would have known, but I didn't know how this thing went. I just thought, next thing I know, I just turn left. Going home, just turning left. I thought, well, I must keep changing my mind because I know I'm headed home, but I went left. And I'd be on my stool at my bar ordering my drink. And I thought, you got to drink less if you're going to drink. And I began chapter 3. Well, what I ended up with was beer. I hate beer. Beer smells like sweat socks to me. I never understood why anybody drank it, and I never would have one. But I realized that if I could drink something I hated, I wouldn't drink it anymore. I mean, this is brilliant. I do have an IQ, very high one, and it showed right there. Aha! Figured it out. I'm going to drink beer, but I don't like beer, so I'm going to have them put salt on the rim. I'm going to have them chill the mug, put salt on the rim, put some ice in it. One shot of Tabasco, green olive. It'll be kind of like a margarita Bloody Mary beer. Don't try it. It is bad. It was the worst thing I had ever even seen, much less tasted. And I didn't finish one. And I thought, this is good. I'm going to drink this because I hate this. This will kill me. It smells bad. It looks scary. I'll drink this now. I'll hate it. Got to be ice cold. I need more ice in it. That's the only thing. It's just, ugh. But 2 weeks later, I could drink hot Budweiser in a can. Acquired a taste for this beverage. And 2 weeks later, there could be a cigarette butt in the can. I didn't much care. Spit it out. I mean, it's not going to kill you, you know. I'm not one of those uppity people. I'm flexible, you know. I was just like, Jesus. This is not bad. I'll drink this. And the kids are going, what is wrong with you? Here you are, Girl Scout Leader of the Year, and now you're like this. And I would go to the hospital, and I would come home sometimes and get them someplace, but I had to hurry back to the bar. I mean, it was just not good. And I was destroying these innocent, perfect children, most incredible people I'd ever met, that filled my heart with everything I'd ever wanted it to be, and I'm hurting them a day at a time, and I have no explanation other than it's your father's fault. Never quite sure how, but I'm sure it's like, now they call it post-traumatic stress disorder, but I'm sure it's related to him somehow. There's no way I would do all this. It must be because of him. But I really didn't know why I was doing what I was doing. I couldn't explain it, and I was done trying to think. I don't know if you've ever gotten tired of thinking, but I surrendered to my alcoholism. I just thought, so be it. And one of my sons, who is now 40 years old, he was going through a movement out in California at the time called, it was Terry Cole Whitaker. And she was kind of this new age evangelist, and affirmations were her thing. And he was doing that over in Coronado, and he got an affirmation card, and he plugged it up over my bed with a thumbtack, which concerned me. I don't like thumbtacks in the wall. Not good. And it said, God is my source. And he's so worried about me that he put it up over my bed. Well, I've been diagnosed with acute alcohol poisoning 3 months earlier. That means you don't eat anymore. Vessels are starting to break. You're just getting real bloated, and you're dying of alcoholism, and I couldn't make it stop. And now I'm passing out with the thing that says, God is my source, over my bed for 2 weeks. Not good. But I'm too Catholic to take it down because I don't want to get zapped. So I will be leaving it up there, but I'm trying not to look at it when I'm crawling into my bed. I went through a lot. Can you tell? This is not an easy part of my story because it was bad. God is my source. I'm dying of alcoholism. The kids are going, what's the problem? I just can't figure it out. I don't know. I'll take them to Disneyland, drink gin and tonic on the way, and think about this. And in my drinking and thinking stage, I was trying to think, what is this? And on June 29, 1982, that was my regular birthday. And it was bad, and I didn't get home till 4 in the morning, and the kids were from 16 or 17 down to 4. I mean, there were a bunch of them. I could have been a Mormon, but Catholic was good. You know, they're just everywhere now. And they were standing around my bed because the other thing we were into was Waltons, the Waltons. We did whatever the Waltons did, we did at my house because I just thought that was such a happily ever after family. And so they're all singing around the bed, and they're serving me breakfast in bed, and kids making breakfast is salmonella waiting to happen, you know. Just not good anyway, and I'm going to throw up because that's what I do every morning so I can go to work and put ice packs on my eyes, and I just thought, no way I'm going to be able to eat this food. If I wasn't dying of alcoholism, I couldn't have eaten it, but now I really cannot eat it. And one of the kids had a tear. And I tried to drink away all my feelings because I don't like feelings. They make me nervous. I tried to drink them all away, but I got a feeling attack and I felt bad. And so I said, I'm not going to drink today. I'm sorry. I'm not going to drink today. I'll take you guys to dinner later. Just let me rest for a few minutes. Let me just rest. I don't know what's wrong, but and they just kind of all walked out. And I felt bad. I felt really bad. I couldn't believe I felt so bad because usually I just avoided any more feelings, just take another drink. And I meant it that day, and I could only make it 2 hours without getting the shakes. And I would have to drink at work because I couldn't afford to get the shakes there. And it was not going well. And I made it 2 hours, and I had to lie and go get a drink. I had to. I mean, you would understand, but they didn't understand, so that's why I had to lie. I couldn't tell them I had to have a drink. I couldn't drink in front of them because I promised I wouldn't. So I had to go. I was going to go get a drink and hurry right back. And I came out of a blackout that night, and I didn't know where I was, and I didn't know where they were, and that had never happened. And I asked God, I said, I'm not sure if you're there, and I'm not sure if you'll help me, but this is so bad, and I don't know what to do. And God will always do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. He will never do for me what I can. But I didn't know what to do, and I certainly didn't know to come to you. So God felt sorry for me, so he just had a lady named Flo 12-step me that morning. And I told this lady the truth. I told her everything. I told her more information than I even knew I knew. And she was so nice to me. And she said, it's going to be okay. I'll take you to be an AA. I said, really? She goes, oh, yeah. She goes, you're never going to have to feel like this again, and I'll take you to be an AA. I said, okay, I'll be an AA. I'm in. I will do that. I had no idea what it was, but I'm joining. And so she says, but here's my phone number, and I want you to call me it before you drink. Well, I'm never drinking again. This is horrible. And now I'm going to be an AA. I've already practically joined, you know, and I told her I would. But something about joining AA will make you thirstier than the day before when you weren't joining, because now it's bad. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to die. And so I thought, well, you can drink it. They just want you to check in first, you know, because she said, call before you drink. And so I called her and I said, well, I'm going to need to drink and be in AA, you know, because I'm very stressed. I'm not doing well. I'm shaking really bad and I'm nervous. And I'm starting to sweat. And they go, mama, 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 mama. And you go, no, I don't want to drink. I want to be in AA. And they hang up and you're good. And you're going to be an AA, and you're not going to drink, because drinking's bad, and AA's good. And you're going to be an AA, and I got it. And it's like labor pains. 2 hours later, it hit. I'm going to need a drink. I am not going to be able to be in AA and not drink, because I'm like a wreck now. I'm worse than I've ever been in my whole life. I'm sitting in my mental patient rocking chair going really fast, going nowhere, and I just don't know if I can last 2 more minutes, and I call a flow, and I said, you know, I want to be an AA and everything, but I'm going to drink a glass of wine, and I'm going to drink a big one, because I'm not going to be able to be in AA and not drink. I mean, it's just too much. And I go, no, I don't want to drink. I want to be an AA. It's exhausting being sober. And it wore me out. And I realized, why put all this extra stress on myself? You know, because I don't owe you anything. And I'm going to have to put my foot down with her. Because they get pushy. Once you say you'll join, they're pushy. You know, they're just, you got to put your foot down with these people. And I, at this time, I'm calling her and I'm telling her I'm drinking and I'm going to be an AA. And that's it. And I'm serious and I'm pissed now. I'm pissed, I'm shaky, I'm sweating, I'm not having a good day. And I called her, and what came out of my mouth was, if you don't come here right now and be with me, I won't make it 1 more minute. Well, she's there in 2 minutes. It's like they're out on the stoop waiting for the call, because they know this is a pathetic person who's just barely hanging on, and she's waiting for that last desperate. And that was pathetic desperate. And I get, and she's like there. Now I'm embarrassed. You know, I've obviously overreacted. They have your address. They're coming to get you. You got to join now. There is no way out of it once they know where you live. I mean, it's just like, Jesus Christ. And that was my first day of sobriety. Now, I can't tell you what happened yesterday, but I got that one down in my memory. Long day. And she came and she babysat me so I could be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if she wouldn't have come, I wouldn't have been here, because I couldn't do it 1 more minute by myself. I didn't know it was a wee deal. Trust me. So she takes me to the meeting, and I don't know, and it's Thursday night, Channel Road, Lakeside, California, and I'm in my meeting, and it's the first meeting, and I'm looking around, and I'm sweating, I'm trying to put on makeup. If you're dying of acute alcohol poisoning, getting eyeliner on, it's not going to go smooth, you know, so it was a little messy, and I was sweating whatever blush I had off. I just looked like crap. Trying to look good, you know, because you don't want them to know. You'll never. If I got lip gloss on, you cannot tell I'm a newcomer. I had that one, you know, and I'm in there, and Joe says, my name is Joe, and I'm an alcoholic, and I've been sober 30 days. Well, everybody clapped, and I thought, oh, Christ. You got to say your name, you're an alcoholic, and how long? So, you know, and she's poking. And I said, I'm Michaeline, I'm an alcoholic, and I've been sober 11 hours. Well, they went nuts. You know, I mean, I don't know what I thought you were going to do, and you weren't half as impressed with Joe's 30 days, which kind of should be better than mine, because I got less, but they loved my 11 hours. They were totally into me. You know, I'm like, yeah, all right. And I'm like, And I'm dying, and I just thought, and then I raised my hand again because I didn't know how you counted time. I said, and I was awake. Because I thought, I don't know if you guys count sleeping time or sober time, but I want credit for the whole 11 hours. I was not asleep and sober. I was awake and sober 11 hours, you know. They clapped again. You know, they're so proud of us. Joe and Betsy, who have just been awesome, they're my new family, came and got me at the airport the other night. And Joe was saying, how do you become a speaker, you know, and travel all over it? I said, well, you just screw over a bunch of kids, don't pay your bills, self-destruct, basically, and they'll put you up in a suite overlooking the ocean. You know, I've never quite figured this out. Oh, you really messed up? We'll pay you your ticket, put you up in a good room, feed you a bunch of crap you shouldn't be eating, and basically, you know, treat you like a little princess. That's how you become a circuit speaker, just so you know. The worse you are, the better they like it here, you know? Give new meaning to the word pathetic, you know. It's like, oh, we'd like to fly you somewhere to tell somebody just how humiliated you really were, you know. And it's just like, okay, I'm going. And I wasn't deep enough to be spiritual, trust me. But if you want to fit spiritual condition, because that's what your sobriety is contingent on, daily, you have to get one of those. I got one the very first day. I've had a fit spiritual condition since June 30th, 1982, because I picked up the phone first. I've showed up at my service commitment when I didn't feel like it. I've answered the phone in the middle or near the end of Law and Order when I'm just going to find out who did it to talk to her, one of my hers. Put it on mute. Turn it off. I've had a fit spiritual condition for this whole time. But that is, it's pretty simple to get one. If it would have been complicated, I wouldn't have made it here. But I got one that first day that I didn't know I was going to get because I picked up the phone first. I didn't know your prayers. I thought the big book was called the Blue Book. I just didn't know what was going to happen here, but I had a sense that night not to leave you. If you were proud of me and you understood without me saying anything else that I'd been sober 11 hours and awake and you wanted me to stay and join you and you were going to help me, I'm joining. Nobody else was proud of me. I wasn't proud of me. My kids weren't proud of me. My boss didn't understand me. And one of the old-timers said to me, you know, some are sicker than others here. And I looked around, I thought, no kidding. Oh, my God, some of these poor people, you know, it's bad. I mean, some of them are here tonight, you know. They're usually the ones that look real good, though, I'll tell you. I never thought she meant me. But every day I was in AA, I got worse. I got more nervous. I got more real. I started detoxing. I started feeling some stuff and then started making me shake. And I started sitting at my big desk looking at this big stuff on my desk. And I thought, I'm not really qualified to do this job. I don't even know how I got it. And nope, don't get it. And I'm not going to be able to work. And I'm in AA, and I went in and I told the director. I said, I have to leave now. I said, I'm in AA. She said, you're in AA? I said, I'm an alcoholic. I was even drinking at work. I don't know how we landed that hospice contract, but I don't actually remember going. And I've joined AA now, and I have to leave. And she said, take the day off. I said, oh, no, I'm quitting. I won't be able to work and be an AA. It's too much for me. I just can't handle it. I don't, you know, I don't even know how I got this job. You know, I'm really not qualified. And I'll be leaving now. I'm going to go just be, I'll be able to be an AA, but that's about it. It's just too hard, and I gotta do a lot, you know. And tonight I'm supposed to be in charge of the trash, and I just have to go. You have to have 30 days to, you know, do the coffee, but I'm trash. I'm in charge of the trash, you know, and so she let me go. Smart, you know, scared, but she let me go. And I went home to my mental patient rocking chair, and I'm going 180 miles an hour, just going nowhere, waiting to be in my AA meeting, you know, and it's exhausting being sober. It's just wearing me out, you know, and the kids are walking by me looking at me, and they went, "What's wrong with you?" I said, "I don't know. I joined AA, and I had to quit my job today. You know, I can't work and be an AA. It's too much. It's too much. I just can't. I've got the trash, and I'm in charge of the trash, and I have to, you know, you have to get there early, you know, and put the bags up and everything." And the kids are like, "Wow." You know. Yeah, no, I won't be able to work. I just need a rest. I have to rest and be an AA now. And they said, "You know what, Mom? We're going to go to Dad's, because Dad and his girlfriend were sober with Terry Kowitaker at this time and living in Coronado. And they said, we're going to go to Dad's. It's the summer. And we're just going to stay over there while you're in AA." I said, "Well, just give me a couple weeks. They got 12 things they want me to do." And I mean, it's like, not a big program, you know. It's not like Est or Course in Miracles or something. You know, they got 2 books. I mean, it's not rocket science. And they had 12 things they ask you to do. And I mean, I should be able to knock them out in a couple weeks. You know, just give me a couple weeks and I'll... Ooh, you know, it's like it was easier, you know. They're over there on the beach, and I'm like in AA, and you know, and one of my other problems was I didn't want to open mail anymore, and so I didn't, and I had developed a new philosophy that if you don't open it, you don't owe it, and if you don't open it and you don't owe it, it won't depress you. And I hadn't been depressed in quite a while, which, because I got a thing in my mailbox that said, "Your mail is at the post office. Please come get it," because the box had apparently gotten too full. And I kind of laughed at it. You know, I thought, I'm not walking out to the mailbox to get it, but you actually think I'm going to drive across town now to get it. You know, I'm not getting it. That's the end of it. And apparently part of what was in the mail was, you know, "We're going to take the house." And part of what was in the mail was, "We're shutting this off, and we're doing this, and we're doing that." And so when I, you know, had my 90 days, the house was gone, the job was gone, the kids were having to stay over in Coronado. There was a lot of problems. And I didn't really know what else to do. And that was when I got my first major present in ugly wrapping paper. A lot of God's gifts come in ugly wrapping paper. I like stuff with a pretty bow. I love that. Kind of glossy paper and pretty bows. And, you know, I'm kind of like a princess, and I like presents like that. God's usually come in ugly wrapping paper. It doesn't look like you're getting a gift. But the first one was, somebody said, "I have some place for you to stay." What I thought they said was, "I have a mobile home for you to live in." I didn't really want to live in a mobile home. So I said, "I don't think I can do that." They said, "We think you have no place else to go. You're going to have to move there." So I moved into what was called a 14-foot camping trailer, which they're practically round. It is not a mobile home. With red shag carpeting, which is not one of my colors, and the whole theme was off. You know, I was just like, I can't possibly live here. The Volvo was gone, and somebody had replaced it with a Boy Schwinn bicycle. I mean, look at me. Do I look like a bicyclist? You know, it's like, oh, my God, I'm not a camper. I'm not a bicycle person. You know, I'm actually not a plasma seller, although I sold plasma. I'm none of those things. It's, but I had to do it because my sponsor would say, this is a gift. And I'd say an ugly wrapping paper. Everything was I was getting was an ugly wrapping paper. One ugly wrapping paper gift from God after another. Now, she knew they were gifts. I thought God hated my guts because I had it worse than anybody else in AA. I'm riding a bicycle. I'm selling plasma. Somebody got me a job making sandwiches in a deli. And then I thought, you know, and I'm kind of a nutcase anyway. And then I started stealing AA literature from the Alano Club because there's a liquor store adjacent to the deli. And I thought, the only reason I must be here is to help the drunks on the other side. And I'll put stolen AA literature in the half pint and pint bags. That's the only ones I stuffed it in. And then they'd slide in the bottle, and when they pulled it out, out would fly a schedule. And aha, I'm like a messenger from God. You know, I mean, this is what I was like. Everything I was like, if this is a gift from God, an ugly wrapping paper, then it must be for this purpose. The kids are going, how much longer? I'm saying, give me 2 more weeks. You know, because I don't know about you and the steps, but it took a little bit longer than I planned. Like, so far, it must be 30 years, because I'm only at 27, I'm not done yet. You know, it's just like, Jesus. But I got that time to get sober and get a foundation, and I wanted to take one shortcut, and that was get a boyfriend to be in AA with me. And we go to AA dances. And he'd buy me presents, and he'd have a car, and he wouldn't make me live there, and he'd have a credit card. And I don't know if it was the plasma bandage or the fishing cap with the lure or me on the bicycle, but I couldn't get a date. I'm shocked, because I was young and perky, you know, nothing. I couldn't get anything going. And where I got sober, if you whined, you got service commitment. And I had about 15 a day. Even when I quit whining, I just get a look, and my sponsor would sign me up for something else, you know, just like slave labor here, you know. But it was just, I was stretched so thin with H&I and going to this hospital and this jail and this detox and this thing, and I'm in charge of trash. I'm in charge of the tickets at the Saturday night speakers meeting. And I want a date. I mean, is that so wrong? So one night I ride my bicycle to Taco Leo's, put my dimes in the pay phone, call my sponsor, who is not a sympathetic woman. And I'm swearing I'm going to kill myself. I can't take it much longer. And, you know, she's in bed with her old man getting whoopee and watching a TV, which I didn't have one. And everything's great in her life, and I'm just lonely, and I'm scared, and I'm in this camping trailer, and it's metal, and black. And I'm telling her all this, and she says, honey, I want you to ask God to hold you tonight. And sponsors don't really understand, you know. Sometimes you have to re-explain it a few times, you know, and it's like, you know, I'm thinking of hairy chest here. I mean, I want to do the God trip. Don't get me wrong, but I need fur. You know, I need it. Bad. Fur. But if you can't get a date in Alcoholics Anonymous and you're done drinking and you have a fit spiritual condition, you will feel the need of God. And that's what I did. I asked God. I went in that night, and I got in my little cot and the thing, and I just said, if you don't hold me tonight, and if I don't feel it, I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to leave a note. I'm going to say, I ask you to help me and hold me. And you didn't come through, and that's why I'm dead. Amen. And that was my swear-to-God prayer, and I meant it. I was annoyed. You know, I was pissed that I'd been reduced to this kind of suffering in Alcoholics Anonymous. Everybody had it easier than me. This is so pathetic. Who lives like this? And the next morning, I wasn't sure. I mean, I did sleep better than I usually slept, but that could be a fluke. But I didn't get a date that day, so I did it again that night. And I said, God, if you don't hold me tonight, and if I don't really feel it, and if I don't change a little bit or something, I want to see something. And if you don't, I'm going to leave a note. I will say I asked you to help me, and you didn't, and that's why I'm dead. And I woke up the next morning, and I was just a little bit more different, but I wasn't sure if it was just a fluke. So you don't want to give God credit too early. Could just be luck. But pretty soon what happened is I felt his presence. And I felt different. And I started to shift just enough to think, well, I'll kill time while I'm waiting for him. And I'll do the rest of the steps. I'll do that. I'll go to step study, and I'll go to the women's meeting, and I will work harder with my sponsor, and I will just, it's filler. Please understand this. This is not going to be my life ambition. It's filler. But I'll do it all. But I wanted to. It was something happened to me. And I was starting to feel a sense of something that I couldn't explain. But it's after your third step. And what happens is you know something you never knew before, and you can't explain it to anybody, but you've got a confidence that will carry you through anything, and you know that. I knew it. I had no idea what any of it meant, but I had a handle on it. Couldn't explain it, so don't ask me. But then I see all these other people that had done it, and then they got it. And I was caught talking to my sponsor one day, and she says, you know, you're looking for Prince Charming, he's looking for a princess, and you're not one. I know, they just mean to you there. It was true, But I knew it was true. I knew, and I had nothing to offer. Making a meatloaf doesn't make a good partner. It makes a good meatloaf person, you know. It was just, you know, clean up your credit. Take those steps. Get painstaking about this phase of your development, and then you'll be amazed for you halfway through. And I started getting painstaking. Painstaking means it's stretching you some. Not convenient and a little scary, if you ask me. But I've always been in structured step study for my entire sobriety, and I've learned from the best of the best how to take these steps and stay focused, and you keep your service commitments, and you do this, and you go to any length, and you don't go. They didn't have Starbucks. I didn't remember when I got sober, but you don't go buying Starbucks when you still owe that creditor money. They were very mean to me where I got sober. They're just pissy, really. I mean, just hurry. But they said, you're going to take care of first things first. You're going to be painstaking, and you're going to make this happen. And pretty soon the kids are coming home, and pretty soon I'm living in an apartment with the running water and a phone and everything. I mean, and I only had a bicycle, and I see this Carl from the club comes over to my house, and he knocks on the door, and he says, honey, I brought you a car. I know the kids came home, and you can't take them to their dental appointments with that bicycle. And I brought you a free car. And it's full of gas, and it's got good tires on it. And I'm like, oh, my God, a free car. And I go out, and it was a red Pinto. And I said, I can't. He goes, no, honey. I said, no, I mean I can't. wouldn't. You know, I just can't. So Carl took the car back to the club. I called my sponsor. I said, are you sitting down? I said, Carl brought me a free car. And she goes, oh, my God, a gift from God. And I said, no, it was a red Ford Pinto. I told him, no, thank you. She goes, what, are you holding out for a Volvo? And I said, yes, I am. You know? My sponsor always said, I cannot believe you. And I never knew why till I got one like me. And she says, you call Carl, you apologize. You tell him you're sorry even if you don't mean it. You beg him to bring you that car back. We have hauled you all over the place. You need to give rides to newcomers. She goes, I can't believe you. And then you get on your knees and you ask God to relieve you of the bondage of self and take away that stuff that's getting in the way of your usefulness. which means you drive a red Ford Pinto. I drove it. And about a week, it's kind of like beer, I just acquired a taste for my car. I love my car. I was hauling newcomers, getting the kids to the dentist appointments, was getting a step study without waiting for, I mean, it was amazing. Pretty soon I'm making these amends. Pretty soon I'm doing this. Pretty soon I get to be a greeter at the conference. I mean, it's just like, God. And I wasn't doing any of it by myself. I was a lightweight. I was scared a lot. I went to turn myself in on a warrant, and I carried my grocery bag with my big book and my toothbrush. Now, this was failure to register my car. My big crime. But I'd never had a warrant, and I had not been in trouble with the court system. And you get a warrant, and I think I'm going to jail. So I think maybe I'm going to jail to help people. So I go in with my big book, my toothbrush, and my pajamas in my little Vons grocery bag, and I surrender to the court. And I tell them, I am sorry, I was careless and irresponsible, and I wasn't good with money, and my sponsor wouldn't let me mentioned that I was an alcoholic. She goes, you just need to own this one. And I said, I'm throwing myself on the mercy of the court. He goes, well, just pay $100. I said, oh, I can't pay any money. I'm hardly getting by now. I'm so plasma. I mean, I just cannot. He goes, we'll set up little payments. I said, oh, no. No, I think I might have a greater calling, and maybe I'm supposed to go to jail. And he's going, we're going to, you know, set up baby little payments. I said, I can't pay anything. I'm telling you, I got nothing. I got no money, and there's no way I'm going to be able to, let me do my time in jail. My boss has said I can go. And he goes, you know what, I'm just going to waive the fine, and I'm going to put you on probation. I said, well, I don't have a phone either. You know, I mean, it's not really... And so if I have to check in with anybody, it's going to be, it's just, you just go. This case is dismissed. And I thought, well, I tried. I was willing. But the biggest amends I had on my list was to my father. And my mom had died when I was young, and I got my little sister and brother to raise as well. And my dad's relationship with and mine was always very, very broken. And I'd worked inventory, and it took me 5 years to get to my part. That fourth column's kind of big. And I couldn't get it. You know, I was like, well, this and that. You know, and finally, my sponsor didn't make me have 20 years when I only had five. She let me have five. She let God be in charge of when I needed to see what I needed to see. And so what I finally saw one night was I thought I'd always wanted him to be a good dad, and I'd never been a great daughter. I wanted him to accept me for who I was, but I didn't accept him for who he was. And the steps make you go back and reverse. I mean, the weirdest thing I'd ever thought of, but you're supposed to be about everything you want, and you have to go first. Well, I thought, I prayed, and then I wanted to. I hadn't seen him in years. And I now had a new father anyway, so I could let him off the hook. I thought, I'm covered. So I flew back to Houston, and I'm getting ready to go make my amends to my dad, and I'm ready. I'm ready to be a good daughter. I'm not going to put one demand on him to be more than he is, be different than he is. And I'm talking to my aunt, and that's crazy. She's from Texas, too. And she just said to me, it's just like we weren't connected, and now I'm in AA, and I see all these things, and I just want to go be a good daughter. And she goes, honey, that's not even your real daddy. I said, what? She goes, honey, your mom got pregnant by the restaurant owner. I think he was a Greek or a Jew. I never could remember. But anyway, and then later on she met your daddy. I said, I'm not German. I'm a Greek or a Jewish person. She goes, well, I'm sorry, honey, I thought you knew. Well, anyway, don't pay that. No, never mind. So she goes on with her story. I'm sitting there So I think, oh, my God, I'm going to see my dad. I'm going to make amends to him. I could go on Oprah right now. I mean, this is big. And I raced over to the Legacy Club, and I talked to Lois, who's an old-timer, right outside of Pasadena Home Group. And I said, Lois, I'm a Greek or a Jew. She said, what? I said, I'm not German. That my dad's not my dad. And so I tell her this story, and I said, I'm supposed to see him this afternoon. I came to make amends. It took me 5 years of inventory. Blah, 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 blah. And she goes, oh, honey, a daddy's a daddy. Is that the relationship you came to clean up? I said, yeah. She goes, well, then go clean it up. Daddy's a daddy. Don't pay that. No, never mind. She goes, let's have a meeting on acceptance for the little California girl. She seems to have a problem. Never told my dad I knew. If he honored me enough to raise me anyway without mentioning, I thought I didn't need to mention it. That meeting on acceptance just changed my heart. It didn't matter. Kind of like being a Greek or a Jew, fathered by a German man. I mean, it's just fascinating, really. I loved him. I loved him just the way he was. And when I loved him just the way he loved me just the way I was. It was amazing. And every amends I made was exactly like that. I became a good employee. They became great employers. Fascinating concept. You pay your bills before they turn it off. Whoa. Then they'll only send you one notice and they won't call you. I mean, I thought, this is incredible. It's a miracle. Pretty soon I'm raising those kids and I meet Prince Charming on AA campus. And a princess is somebody in AA, it's like walking in the middle, passionate about recovery. Doesn't need an extra paycheck coming in, can do it quite nicely on their own. Actually has something to offer, kind of interesting. Doesn't mean you're all that in a bag of chips, it just means the relationship's a blessing, it's not a necessity. And I got to have that. And then he died unexpectedly without my permission 10 years later. Just dropped dead. He'd been speaking up in L.A., got a clean bill of health on Friday, dropped dead on Sunday night. So if you get one, they're usually only good for 2 days, from what I've discovered, you know. I thought, Jesus Christ, that was quick. And that was the worst year of my life. I just thought, I never felt grief. I'd never felt anything so heavy and hard. But you guys got me through it, and the way you got me through it was you made sure that I knew from the very beginning you keep your service commitment and answer the phone. You tell what you're really feeling like instead of what you think somebody wants you to feel like. And I did that, and I got through it. I knew I would. When you take a third step and you take it and you take it, you know it's all going to turn out fine. Everything here always turns out fine. And I'm like, got it. I got it. It's going to be fine. I've loved two men in Alcoholics Anonymous. The other one relapsed. And he doesn't live with me any longer because my house is a sober AA house. And I wish him well and I judge him not because I have the same disease. I've had heart attacks and climbed to the top of Mount Everest, Mount Spokane. I think it's shorter. I want to make sure that one got right. But I did that with one of my granddaughters. And we climbed to the top of Mount Spokane about 3 years ago. And I have four children that are incredible people. They're my favorite people in the whole world again. And I'm their favorite mom in the whole world again. And we've had 27 years of memories from these rooms. And my oldest daughter will be 43 years old next month. And my youngest daughter is 31. And they were just home for a week. So we could go to the James Taylor concert. And we just rocked out because that's what we did growing up. They grew up on that music. And they flew in. All my kids flew in for Mother's Day week. They wanted to do a whole week of Mother's Day things. They're 43 down to 31. I have 8 grandchildren that are 25 down to 5. My oldest grandson is 25 years old. scares me to death. But whatever. And I was telling Mom, I was looking at my neck. I do that. I was getting ready for my home group one Sunday morning last year, and I was looking at my neck, and I don't know what happened to it, but this is not the neck I was given. Somebody has replaced it with somebody else's neck, because this is not my neck. I just knew it. And I'm looking at it, but I've got a commitment at my home group, of course, and so I'm scared. Because what else is going to look like my neck, you know? Well, I know, but anyway, it's not good. And so I got to hurry because I got a commitment in my home group. So I'm racing to my home group, and my cell phone rings, and it's my 23-year-old granddaughter. And she goes, "Grandma, are you sitting down?" I says, "I'm driving. I'm hoping so." And she says, "I'm pregnant, and you're going to be a great grandma." I said, "Hang on." Tilted that mirror, looked at my neck. I thought, "You look damn good for a great-grandmother." God's gift. I thought, "Grandmother, you're starting to go downhill fast. But great-grandmother, you got it." The memories we have in my home are captured in pictures. And it's a family that healed. We remember the family that broke. I'm as active in Alcoholics Anonymous today as I was the day I got here. Well, much more so. And it's people like the people that are here tonight from Charlotte that touched my heart. I needed every meeting that I've ever gone to get me through some of the times I've had to go through. And I want to be there for you, and I want to say thanks. That's it.